Welcome to the Funny Story Podcast. I'm Annalise Griffin, Editor-in-Chief of Brooklyn Based. Every month, we co-curate a storytelling show at Brooklyn Brewery with comedian and storyteller Tom Chaloux. The way it works is simple. Tom finds a few interesting people, sometimes comedians, sometimes not. We pick some folks from around Brooklyn, and each one tells a true, or at least true-ish, story. Tom hosts, we all drink beer. For our first podcast, we have stories about doing business the New York City way, nemesis, and what happens when a nice Southern girl stops saving it and starts having sex. Lots of sex. Yes, there is some pretty explicit content here, so be warned. Here's Tom to explain a little more about the show and to introduce our first storyteller, Stu Leonard.
Ladies and gentlemen, the way I like to do this show, I have other performers on the show, people I do shows with, people who do kind of the storytelling scene, and then I meet people, and people are always asking me, oh, Tom, you're a storyteller. You have your own storytelling show. How do you tell a story? How do you do it? Is it the structure? Is it the format? Is it, you know, do I have to take a public speaking class? And I say, you know what? It's none of that stuff. First thing is you have to be just an interesting person. You know what I'm talking about? Like, the people you know that tell good stories, they're just interesting people, aren't they? Yes. So I did a show the other night. And this guy came backstage, and we just chatted for about 10 minutes. He's an interesting person. So I emailed him, and I said, Stu, will you come do my show? Does anyone hear of Stu Leonard's, the grocery store? Yes. Stu, a lot of these people are from Brooklyn. They do Fresh Direct. Forgive them. It's all right. Anyway, so I meet him. I send him an email, and I say, Stu, come do my show. And then he calls me up and he says, Tom, I would love to do your show, but what am I going to do? What story should I tell? I said, Stu, it's going to be fine. Just come. I know you're going to be great. Ladies and gentlemen, Stu Leonard.
Here I go, baby. You know, I do not know what I'm doing here right now, to tell you the truth. One of the things, I just met Tom, what was it, a week or two ago? And Jim Gaffigan was doing a show, and I heard Tom, and he was so great. And so I just started talking to Tom, and he said, you know, he teaches comedy, he teaches storytelling. So I said, hey, could you teach me a little bit about it? Next thing you know, here I am, you know, today. And, you know, I'm here tonight. I was down in New York today. I had a doctor's appointment. I look at Tom. He's, like, so skinny. First thing the doctor says is take 10 pounds off, and so I walked over to his office, and this afternoon, you know, we just spent a little time together, and he's trying to coach me, you know, on how to tell a story. And he didn't give me much instruction for tonight other than this afternoon. And then we just went out to have dinner together at that Bamante's. Have you been at that place? You know, it's a great Italian place. And the thing that I like is, you know, it's real family, you know, over there. And Anita came out, who's one of the sisters of the owner, and she was talking to Tom and I, and she told me it's a family business. It's been there for 114 years, and what's really cool about it is that her brother owns it and has three daughters, and I instantly knew it's family, you know, and, you know, we started talking, and, you know, I was telling even Tom a little story we always tell about family business, because we have a family business in Connecticut, is that, you know, a guy goes in to his doctor, and he gets a checkup, and the doctor says to him, you know what, you only have 6 months to live. And the guy goes, 6 months? He said, that's all. What do I do in the last 6 months of my life? He said, I want you to go get a job with a family business first thing tomorrow. And he said, with 6 months to go, he said, you want me to, you know, work for family business? What do you want me to do that for? He said, because it'll be the longest 6 months of your life. You know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, I'm a Connecticut guy. I grew up in Connecticut. Our family business in Connecticut. And we opened up a store up in Yonkers, New York, off the Major Deegan. And so I came down to Yonkers, New York. I mean, we're not New York kind of people. And I'm down there, and I met the mayor down there, Spencer, you know, and I met his assistant, Sal Saliano, who, he's a crusty 25-year cop, you know. And I'm meeting the two of them, and I'm talking to him, and Sal says to me, he said, you know, Stu, I'd love you to meet my son. You know, we're a real family-orientated community here in Yonkers. And I'm like, well, gee, isn't that nice? You know, and a couple days later, I get a phone call, and it says, hey, I'm Sal's son, Johnny. He said, Goomba Johnny. And I said, Goomba Johnny? And he said, yeah. He said, I'm a DJ on 103.5, you know, WTKU. But anyway, so I'm talking to Goomba Johnny on the phone. He says, hey, Stu, you know what? You should advertise on my radio station. He said, you know, we really cover the Yonkers area. And I said, hey, that's great. I said, could you send me, like, a price sheet or something? He said, Stu, I'll send you all that stuff. He said, but you know what? Just advertise. He said, things will work out. And I'm like, hey, thanks, Goomba Johnny, you know. And go back, and we needed some really, you know, great local produce from the area, and I'm asking around, and everybody said, hey, you got to go down and see Al down at A&J Produce at Hunts Point Market. And I'm like, well, fine. So I called Al up. I said, hey, I'd like to get an appointment down there. So 5 a.m. is when you go to Hunts Point Market. I don't know if anybody's been down there at all, but that's when it's bustling like Times Square. All the trucks, fresh produce are coming in. So I go to Hunts Point with some of our buyers and walking up this concrete staircase at 5 in the morning, you know, and open up this, like, metal door. And behind it is this beautiful mahogany, you know, office. And there's a chef up there at 5 o'clock cooking breakfast. And at the end of the table is this guy, I'll never forget it, he has, like, a yellow cashmere sweater, you know, a big cigar at 5 in the morning, probably Cuban. And a Florida tan, I mean, he looked like a maid kind of guy, you know? And he puts his hand out, he goes, hey, Stu, how you doing? He said, I'm Allie Tomatoes. And I said, Allie Tomatoes? He said, we got the best produce. You know, we're sitting there eating breakfast in the morning. And he said, come and look at everything. And he said, you know what, I make deliveries up around Yonkers all the time. He said, it's the best stuff. He said, I'll send a few trucks up. And I said, well, whoa, could you know, you have any prices? He said, Stu, we got the best stuff. We got competitive prices. He said, just take a few deliveries. He said, things will work out. I'm like, okay, Allie, thanks a lot. Then I end up meeting a guy. I don't know if you know Bo Deedle. You know, he was on I Miss a lot and everything. So I meet Bo Deedle, and he says, I want you to meet a friend of mine that has marinara sauce. And I said, well, that's cool, you know. You know, bring them up to the store. So one day, like, these two silk suits show up, you know, at the store. This one guy has these, like, blue tinted glasses on. And they come walking up, and I said, hey, how you doing, you know? And Bo, one of them was Bo Deedle. The other guy said, hey, I'm Stu. He said, hey, I'm Joey Potts and Pans. Joey Potts and Pans. He grew up, actually, down here in Brooklyn, okay? And he used to sell pots and pans. So, you know, I don't know if they were off a truck at a JFK or whatever, but, you know, Joey Pot. So anyway, I said, hey, Joey, how you doing? He said, I got this marinara sauce. I'm just launching it. He said, we'd love to sell it up here at the store. And I said, you know, just bring it in. I'm not even going to. He said, Stu, don't worry about it. Things will work out. He said, you'll be happy. You'll love my sauce. I'll come in and demo it. He said, it'll be great. So anyway, I'm sitting there going, wow, you know, at this store now we have, you know, Paul Newman's salad dressing, you know, Paul Newman's marinara sauce. You know, he was right from our town there. So we have Newman's up on the shelf as a neighbor and everything. We have my mother's marinara sauce up on the shelf. And now we got Joey Potts and Pants. You know, so we got three marinaras. So Bo calls me one day. He says, let's go down to Rao's in Harlem. And let's, you know, come on down and have dinner down there. I go down there. I'm sitting down there. He says, I want to introduce you to a few people. One of the guys that comes over, the bartender, Nicky DeVest, you know. And the other guy's Frank Pellegrino, you know, Frankie. So I meet Frankie and Nicky, and I'm sitting there talking, and Frankie says, hey, Stu, we're launching a salad, a marinara sauce, Rao's. He said, we'd love to launch it up at Stu Leonard's. He said, how about taking 100 cases? He said, let me get this. I said, hey, Frankie, you have a price, right? Hey, Stu, don't worry about a thing, you know? Things will work out, you know? And I'm getting all of these sauces now. I got Newman's, I got my mother's, I got Joey Potts and Pans, I got, you know, Rayo's. I'm walking through the store one day with my dad, and he looks up and he sees all these marinara sauces, and he says to me, hey, Stu, you know, what do we have all these sauces for? You know, I said, hey, Dad, we just opened in New York, you know, sort of, look, the store's packed, you know, don't worry about it. It's sort of, it's a long story. He said, Stu, you know what, we really shouldn't have so many competing marinara sauces. He said, why don't you get rid of one of them? So I went to our buyer, I called him up, I said, hey, what's the slowest seller? And he said, Joey Pots and Pans. You know, that's slowest. I said, hey, Andrew, could you call Joey up and tell him, you know, we're going to discontinue his product? And he looked at me and he said, you know, Stu, I love working here, but I'm not calling Joey and discontinuing his product. He said, how about you doing it? So I said, okay. So I called Joey up, very short business-like conversation. Okay, he totally understood we had to cut down from four marinara sauces to three. That's why my mother is still pissed off at me for eliminating her marinara sauce from the store. I just said to her, Mom, you know what? Things will work out, baby, you know? Thank you, Tom. Thank you, everybody. How did I do? How did my...
Did things work out or what? Stu Leonard. Great. Did I tell you? I knew it. I spent 5 minutes with a guy. I knew he was going to have a good story. I know why he thought of that, because he said to me, he said, what am I going to do? And I said, don't worry about it. Just come. I should have said, it's all going to work out. Stu's like, it seems like we don't have a lot in common what we do. Stu is Stu Jr. His dad, Stu Leonard Sr., started Stu Leonard's. He started from a small grocery store. And my dad actually started an ice cream store, and I was his man. I was his manager. My dad, he always wanted to work on his own. Like, he always wanted to quit. He worked in computers, IBM, Honeywell in the 70s. And he used to always say, I can't wait to put this behind me. I want to open an Orange Julius. He wanted to open. Like, some people dream big. My dad was like, he wanted a little Orange Julius at the mall, you know, so nobody could tell him what to do. So finally, he bought a Dairy Queen in Randolph, Massachusetts. Dairy Queen. Can you believe it? This is classic, my dad. He buys the Dairy Queen. He rips down the word queen, and he puts up the word barn. He doesn't even buy matching letters. It's like Dairy Barn. He didn't want to pay the 2.8% royalty or whatever you had to pay to Dairy Queen. He was like, what the hell should I give them the money for, you know? So we bought our milk from, like, the Roselle Dairy in Massachusetts, and we got the thing going. And it was a complete, it was a total Dairy Queen. It was shaped like a Dairy Queen, everything except the barn. And people would even come up, they'd be like, oh, can I, you know, give me a DQ bar, and we'd be, you know, and we renamed everything. The DQ bars became DB bars. You know, we weren't hiding anything. The Blizzard, you know that Blizzard? It's like a thick shake with like Oreos in it. It became the Blizzard, B-L-I-Z-Z-I-D. I was like, the IRS is never gonna recognize the place. They'll drive right by, it's fantastic. We're hidden. My dad was a little bit paranoid though. Like, he really wanted to be his own man, but he had like, he was not cut. That's why I was there, because he couldn't deal with the high school kids, you know? So he would, it was in like a, you know, the Dairy Queens, they're in these parking lots, and kids would come in with their cars, the teenagers. You know those summer Massachusetts teenagers? They'd come in with the jeans and like no shirt, and they would work on their car. And my dad didn't like people like fixing their car in his parking lot. He thought somebody was gonna like drop a wrench on their foot and then sue him, you know? So he comes in one day with a Polaroid camera, and he's like, you see this Polaroid? This is a hedge against lawsuits. He thought he was gonna solve everything by Polaroiding everything. So he just started taking pictures. Anytime there was any kind of dispute, you know, someone would come up and they'd be like, I said rainbow sprinkles, these are chocolate. He'd be like, hold on a second. They'd be like, you know, this flashbulb of, we had a drawer full of pictures of surprised people with wrong ice creams. Like, and the kids working on their cars, he loved to photograph these guys because he didn't like this idea of these like sweaty young men. And they all had that kind of like long 70s hair and the no shirt, you know? So we had this completely, I remember one time I opened the drawer and the the milk delivery guy was there, and he looks in the drawer, and I swear to God, it's all these harsh-looking Polaroids of, like, shiny, sweaty men with wrenches, you know, and, like, grease on their face. I mean, it looked like bad porn, you know? But we only had it for a couple of years, and then it was like, I remember, he didn't think American teenagers had a good work ethic, you know? They always wanted to take ice cream breaks. They're like, can I take a break? He's like, these kids always want to take a break, you know? So then I hired this girl one time, this little Chinese girl, and she's working away, and then she wouldn't take a break, and he said, tell her to take a break. It's probably against the law here. We got to give her some kind of workers' comp break or something like that. So I told her, I said, you got to take a break. Mian, you got to take a break. And she was like, she sat down, and she just sat there looking at the floor. And I was like, what's the problem? And she said, why you punish me? And I went back to my dad. He's back in, like, the walk-in freezer. And I said, that girl Mian thinks that a break is punishment. And he was like, tell her to get her sisters and cousins in here. He was so excited that somebody thought a break was punishment. He was like, I want all Chinese in this place. I don't care. They can take over the joint. They can turn it into the Ding Ho Village for all I care. I swear to God. I was like, my dad was like, I don't know what it was in his head. He was actually longing for a hostile takeover of his restaurant by the Chinese. It's fantastic. We have more storytellers. Here's a guy that we've just done a slew of shows together. He's so funny. Such a great comic. And I don't know what he's telling. I never know what people are going to do on my show. That's part of the fun of this show, is that I invite them to do the show, and then I sit in the back sipping my beer and enjoying stories. Let's welcome Josh Gondelman. Josh.
Thanks so much, Tom. I've been past Dairy Barn. hello, guys. It's such a pleasure to be here with you. We've heard some family stories tonight. I'm going to tell the opposite of that. This story is about a time I learned a lesson, which a lot of stories are about. But more excitingly, it's about the time I defeated a nemesis. Yeah. Yes. I did it in, it took me 3 days to find and defeat a nemesis. That's pretty good. Normally, when you want to take out a nemesis, right, it takes decades. You've got to learn how to sword fight in a cave, find the six-fingered man who killed your father. Not in this case, 3 days beginning to end. And I'll tell you, my nemesis was the CEO of a pharmaceutical company. Yeah, so he sounds like a formidable opponent until I tell you that he's the CEO of a pharmaceutical company that manufactured a penis-numbing spray marketed towards premature ejaculators. So kind of less of a big deal, because we're talking about a medical doctor who at some point was like, don't worry, guys, you handle cancer. I'm going to hook it up for the dudes who think sex feels too awesome. Why? No reason. Have you been talking to Sheila? So that's my nemesis. The reason we're in contact at all is I do some freelance magazine writing, and I got contacted by a magazine I write for. I don't want to tell you the name. I don't want to get in trouble. It's the name of a city, possibly the city we're in. So who's to say? A magazine with the name of a city is very official. It was an official magazine. And I get an email from my editor there that said, Josh, would you test and write about a penis-numbing spray marketed towards premature ejaculators? And of course, like any man, I wrote back saying, why would you ask me? That's never happened before. They sent me back an amount of money that they would pay me to do this job. And before even reading their entire email, I just wrote, yes! And then I sent another email apologizing for how quick that first email had been. Promising future correspondence would be more mutually satisfying. Offering to buy my editor brunch, you get it. So, I get this assignment, and that night, I'm going on a third date with a young lady. Yeah, that's exciting. Yes, exactly. So I'm very excited. We're out drinking together. I mention this assignment because I'm a little drunk. Whiskey made me tell the secret. So I mentioned that I had this writing assignment, and she said, I'm not into that at all. which is very reasonable. I don't want to make her sound like the monster here. That's me. But she said, I'm not into it at all, which totally, because this is like a third date. We'd made out, but we hadn't even had sex without performance-enhancing drugs yet. She doesn't want me coming at her for the first time with like a dead-eyed, remorseless Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men boner. Just deciding who lives and dies on a whim. So she's like, I'm not into it, and I won't do it. And I said, because of whiskey, fine, I'll handle it myself. Which is the most self-righteous way any man has ever announced he was leaving a date to go masturbate at home. So I left, and I was mad. I felt like I'd been a jerk, and I was spiteful. So I took the penis numbing spray, and I used the maximum amount of numbing sprays. I used 10 penis numbing sprays, which is way more than anyone needs. That's true. I used 10 sprays. That's like, most guys that even buy the spray on their own use like one or two sprays, and that gives them what they need. 10 sprays is for guys who have an orgasm when you hear the word sex. Like, that's the domain I was in. So I get started, right? And it was not great, guys. Masturbating was like listening to a Fish song in that I was 20 minutes in, no end in sight. Just a lot of aimless noodling, like, boo. Why does anyone like this? Is this still the same thing as before? It feels like a different thing. Neither thing is good. But I finished, and it wasn't like normally when you finish, and it's like, booyah. It was like a different kind of thing. Like, you know how sometimes you order pizza, and there's like one slice left, and you don't want to eat it, but you don't want to deal with like figuring out what to do with it later, so you just kind of like, it was that, but with my dick. So a couple days later, I interviewed the CEO of the company, who said a lot of hilarious things that he later denied saying. He had kind of, his vibe, I would say, over the phone was science bro. Like, his name isn't Chad, but I'll call him Chad, because he seemed like he went to medical school somewhere with palm trees, if that makes sense. That's the vibe he was throwing. So we talk, I write the article, I go to my editor. In the meantime, I've promised this young woman that I'm still seeing that this would not come up again, this issue. I promised, I called her when I filed the article. I was like, it's done, it's dead, I put it to bed. She was very grateful. So I filed the article, and I don't hear from my editor for like 2 days, and then finally, she emails me back, and she's like, no, dummy, you have to have sex with like a human lady. And I was like, uh-oh. Because now I was in the position where I explicitly had to choose between work and love. My life had turned into the plot of a romantic comedy. Specifically, it had turned into the plot of the romantic comedy How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And I was Kate Hudson, which I was not entirely comfortable with. So I don't know what to do. So I talked to my roommate, who's kind of my, he's like my advisor in the affairs of everything shady. And we came up with, he's just good at it. So we came up with a couple possible solutions. Number one, this lady and I hadn't decided we were exclusive yet. I could hook up with someone else under the guise of non-exclusivity, and she would have to be cool with it. Right. But that's not how people work. Second option, we could break up. And I could just do whatever scumbag thing I needed to do to get this money. Because I felt like, at this point, it's all worth the story, right? Like, everything's going crazy, but it'll be worth it for the story in the end. So, third option is I just tell her. I'm honest with her. I say, look, I need to do this. I thought I was done. I thought I was out. One last score, but I was wrong. I need your help. I'm sorry. But that's how things are. And just leave it, you know, put it to her. And kind of eat crow on it. So that's what I decided to do. And mercifully, we had had sexual intercourse by that point. It was normal. And she was like, sure, we can do that, because she's an angel. And so we did. We had sex, and with the penis numbing spray, we used a lesser dosage. I kind of wanted to go even further than the first time. I wanted to use 11, so I could be like, my penis goes to 11. But I thought it wasn't worth ruining my boner forever over a Spinal Tap reference. So we had sex, and again, it wasn't terrific, because for me, and this might just be like a quirk about my own body, but one of the like the principal things that makes me enjoy any sexual experience is being able to feel my penis. And I kind of lost that key element, and it wasn't as good. But we did it, right? We finished. It was fine. I wrote the article. The article runs on the internet. Within 2 hours, I receive an email from the CEO, and I knew he was mad because the title of the email was, "This is ridiculous." And I'm pretty sure he wasn't sending me like a link to a video of a capuchin monkey riding a unicycle or some shit. Like, he was mad at me. So I didn't read his email, haven't to this day, because I knew what it said. It was just gonna be like, "Hey, smart guy, bet you didn't even know premature ejaculation was a serious problem. Bet you didn't know premature ejaculation bored my mother to tears. I bet you didn't know premature ejaculation is the leading cause of Chevy Camaros. Did you, smart guy? Bet you didn't." So I don't answer his email, which feels amazing to not answer someone's email on purpose. It's the best. I didn't answer it. I actually, I said out loud to no one, "He'll hear from me when I hear from his lawyer," which is like just a thing I heard John Hamm say once in a movie. So the next morning I wake up to an email from his lawyer, and I'm like, touche, nemesis. The game is afoot. So I have to get a lawyer to deal with his lawyer, right? And at this point, I don't know what the consequences for this could be, but I can't go to jail over this, because I'm pretty sure if you go to jail, they don't let you bring your penis numbing spray to use on the other guys in case they get frisky. So my lawyer is dealing with his lawyer. Finally, after 3 anxious days where I'm just like, I regretted everything. I was like, this was wrong of me to do. I should never have put this nice young woman in this position. I'm the worst. It gets settled, right? My lawyer emails me back and is like, "Everything's cool. You're out of the woods. We made a few minor edits to the article and changed the things he was the most angry about. You're fine." So I was very grateful. Then 3 hours later, I get another email from this guy directly. Yeah, and I did not read it, but I did email him back. I wrote him, "Dear sir, I believe," or "Dear Chad," I used his name, "I believe our business to be concluded, and I expect no further communication from you. I'm sorry to be short with you, but apparently that's kind of your thing." Someone's on his side? Fuck that guy. "Good luck with all your penis-numbing endeavors, both professional and, I'm assuming, personal. Good day, Josh." And I wrote it that way for 2 specific reasons. First reason is, I wanted to be on record saying this guy was harassing me after we were legally done doing business with one another. I wanted to be on the record. Second reason I wrote that email that way was because I knew he would become furious and email me back right away, at which point my plan was to send him back an email, all caps, 1 sentence, just, "I said good day, sir," which I planned to do, and I was ready. I was lying in wait, you know? The email didn't come. This is a Friday night after business hours. He didn't email me back. I don't know what he was doing, but I didn't hear back from him until the following Monday, where I get another email from him titled, "This is still ridiculous." And I thought I should email him back. I still could have got him with the "I said good day, sir," right? There's no statute of limitations on that. But, I mean, I guess it was a different day. But I didn't. You know, I wanted to let it lie because I'd provoked it too long, and I let it ride. And I haven't heard back from him, which means the lessons I learned were, they weren't like, be kind, be good. They were like, if you're gonna do dirtbag shit, make sure you have a magazine that'll pay for your attorney's fee. And sometimes things aren't worth the story. So thank you guys very much. Have a great night.
We have our next storyteller, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so excited she's here. I want to take credit for booking her, but I think the wonderful people at Brooklyn Based nabbed her, right? She's a great storyteller. She does a lot of solo work and characters. Let's welcome Desiree Birch.
Hi, how's it going? Hey, so since you guys enjoyed that, I assume you guys have no problems with sex, because I'm going to continue talking about that for the next 15 minutes. If you do have a problem with sex or hearing me talking about having sex with anyone, suggest you go over there, have a very loud conversation that interrupts my set for the next 15 minutes. But for the rest of us, I do a lot of solo work, as Tom had mentioned, and one of the shows that I've been doing for several years is called 52 Man Pickup. Thank you. And it is exactly what it sounds like. I took my entire sex life and put each person that I was willing to tell people about on the back of a card, out of a deck of cards. And at the beginning of the show, the cards get shuffled and they get dealt out playing a series of card games, and I tell all of the stories. It's all about game playing and randomness, because that's much of sex in New York City. And so I wanted to present to you just a couple of vignettes from that, because the reason I created that show was because I was 20-something and a female in New York, which means it's just a hot, stinking mess for a while, and you wake up in different beds and you go, what am I doing with my life? But at some point, I wanted to write these things down because I wanted to stop screwing up so much. And basically, some of the stuff that I figured out I really saw, like, this problem starting from the time that I was young, because basically it's the little things that you learn or don't learn when you're young that shape the person you become. Because when I was young, I learned how to please authority, and I didn't learn how to keep my legs closed. And that's seriously, I think, sums up my entire romantic life. And I'm glad that you get that reference. I have an older parent. Some of you women were not ever told to keep your legs closed, but every single one of us at some point when we're young gets that tacit message about subduing our sexuality, because it's like bad people will want to get it or something, and you're like, and like guys are looking at me like I'm nuts, because no guy has ever been taught how to sit in his life, right? You don't need to know that, right? And this is evidenced by every rush hour train where there are people packed in there, and then there's one dude just doing this shit, right? Just sitting there with all this ball entitlement to all this ball real estate he's got to take up, and he's like fully fanning the balls, like, whoo, man, what am I to do with all these balls, you know, like just deeply fanning the ball, like reading the New York Post, you know, because this guy's never reading the Times, you know what I mean? He's reading the fucking Post, just fan it. Meanwhile, there's some chick squishing next to him, sitting on half an ass cheek, trying to figure out how to lean in when she gets to the office. You're like, bitch, you're gonna tip over, just fucking get a seat, you know? So, like, I mean, the thing is, it's like, you've never once seen a woman, just like a nice old lady, sit down on a bench like, yep, just gonna clip some coupons today. Man, is anybody else hot? I am hot. Do you know what I mean? Because we are taught from very young that we're supposed to hide our shame hole or something. It's like this implied message that, like, your vagina is like this horrible, moist, smelly ogre, but somehow everyone still really wants it really bad, you know? So you gotta, like, lock it away in a tower like Rapunzel, you know, this pretty princess, and one day your prince will show up and he'll say, Rapunzel, let down your hair! But, like, you're not allowed to have hair in your vagina anymore, so he's gonna have to be like, Rapunzel, let down your Hitler mustache! The Korean lady yanked off for you at Happy Nail, you know, or whatever. I mean, and I'm not trying to say that I pass judgment if that's what you want to do, if you want to have a Hitler mustache or like that weird little 60s beat poet soul patch thing that happens down there. Like, go for it, but don't do it because some guy said he was into it, because, like, I know most women that I know, and I myself, that guy's like, oh, yeah, do you want to shave or do you want me to shave you? I'm like, fuck no, I see what you do to your face. Like, no. And also, like, any guy who's telling you how to, you know, do, like, basically he's watching too much porn and he thinks it's supposed to come that way, don't trust this guy. He's trying to tell you how to decorate your opera house. He's too busy trying to sneak into the fucking circus all the time. Like, let's not, you know, listen to his taste on how things should be adorned, right? So, anyway, I mean, that will lead me to my first little vignette. So here you can see some of the cards. I pulled out some goodies and some baddies. And we'll start with the first one, this four here, who is Mike. And once you hear the story, you're going to be like, he's a four. But, like, there's so many twos and threes that there's not enough cards in the deck to accommodate them. So he got bumped up. All right, so Mike came along in this long string of guys who kept trying to put it up my butt. And the thing is, yeah, you're like, I know, right? Because the thing is, like, guys don't ask about that anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, the way that's supposed to go is you're supposed to have a conversation when you're like, hey, baby, I was thinking maybe, you know, we could do it in the back door. So she could be like, fuck no, you know? And then, right? And then you're gonna do the thing where you're like, oh, come on, just try it, please. Just relax. Just relax. You know? And then you're gonna get the tip in and she's gonna fly halfway across the fucking room. Do you know what I mean? Just like rocking, like taking that Silkwood shower of shame, just trying to scratch the filth off, right? You know? And like, that's the way things are normally supposed to go, but like, guys don't do that. They think because they bought you 3 gin and tonics, they can just do whatever the fuck they want, you know? And they always wait until you're having sex doggy style because you're both trying to get it over with, you know? And they're like, now it's a power play. You know, so you're doing it doggy style, and then he pulls this classic action where he's like, oops. Right? Oops. Like, he fucking tripped. I'm so sorry. Nothing has ever accidentally fallen up my ass, so I don't understand what the confusion is here. The two holes are very distinct, you know? There was the one you were just in, you know? And it's all pink and ready and wet and, you know? And then there's the other one, and it's like, wah, 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 and that's the one that he accidentally fell into. And, like, you can tell he did it on purpose because he's like, oops, but then he'll, like, leave it there for a second. Like, you're going to change your mind. Do you know what I mean? He's like, oops. Like, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to change my mind. That's like if I was giving you head and your dick slipped in my nose. I wouldn't suddenly be like, oh, yeah, baby, how'd you know? That's what I wanted. No, it doesn't fit there. It's busting it all out, you know? And this was all after he made me watch his sound editing demo video. Oops. Oh, you know what? What I need to mention really briefly, because I didn't before, is that to account for some of this story, I was a virgin until I was 24. I know, right? And then I fucked 52 different people. It's kind of the way that equation works. The longer you wait, the like more hardcore you're gonna go once you get through the light. And like the thing is, you know, I'm black, so like born again Christian, raised, you know, so I was like saving it, you know, I was like, I'm saving it. And I like made it through high school, saving it, and I made it through college, saving it. And I made it to New York, and I was like, does anybody want this shit I have been saving? This is not accruing interest. What the fuck? You know? And like, the thing is, like, when you're saving it, you don't ever take the time to think about, like, you just have this moral imperative, and you don't actually think about the fear of what if nobody actually wants it, which is really more my sort of scenario there. And I was like, maybe nobody wants it. And then I got to New York City, and suddenly there was this city full of people loving the fuck out of me, and it was fantastic, you know? And then somewhere in the middle of all of this, they were just kind of fucking the love out of me, and I didn't know how everything had changed over into me not winning again. So, I had sex with a pirate. You're welcome. Yes. No, I did. And I don't mean a Somalian dude, and I don't mean a guy who works at Disneyland, and I don't mean a Major League Baseball player. I mean a proper Scottish pirate. All right? I mean, actually, I think he was more of like a sex fetishist who like lived and dressed as a pirate and had a boat. But like, I went to college, I took gender and identity studies, so if a person dresses like a pirate and wants to be referred to as a pirate, you fucking call that guy a pirate, all right? And also, yes, I'm sorry, that's just the way identity works now. Also, he was totally properly dodgy. I mean, he did look kind of like Captain Jack Sparrow had a sex with Prince, and then they made a like really short, attractive baby. And like, I'm like 5'11", and I don't know what it is, if there are any other big women in the room, but what is it about fucking short guys that just like, they see you in the bar and they're like, that, I'm climbing that. Like, they gotta get the biggest bitch in there and like prove it to the universe, and they're just like, ahoy, and they're just like, start climbing, you know, like they, and the thing is like, it's so funny because they always, like, my guys always look the same. Like, they're always, like, this tall. They're always at boob height, right? They always have this, like, goatee on, like, they can't get any pussy, so they got to grow one on their face. Like, that guy who's all licking his lips, like, like, at me the whole night. I'm just like, oh, shit, let's get it over with, right? So I'm in this bar, and I've seen this guy, and he's come in with this other very, very drunk woman, and they're cackling and talking and just being grand. And then an hour later, he's, like, right next to me, buying me my next next round, and this woman's gone. So after we make it to like the third or fourth bar, and we're finally making out, I'm kissing him, and I can taste this other woman's pussy on his face. Yes, and I know what pussy tastes like because I went to college, and I've hooked up with some girls, okay? And I'm like, who is this? Who is this? My name is not Susan. Who is this? Do you know what I mean? Like, but I mean, he's a pirate. He should. It's all in his beard. And I'm just like, that's appropriate. Why would you have washed your mouth and brushed your teeth before you came out to hook up with me? Let's keep going. Because this makes sense after gin and tonic number 6. So, you know, we go back to his place and it is totally like covered in trunks and like, you know, coins because he's British. So that's what they use for money. And like, there's like mermaids and ships and shit. And like, also, I look into his bed from the side. I can see the bedroom. And he's got one of these 4-poster deals with, like, grommets in it for, like, chains. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm, like, on my cell phone texting the address to my friends. Like, just, I'm like, oh, shit, what am I in for? But this guy proceeds to fuck the shit out of me. I mean, like, it was great. Like, I mean, it, like, honestly, like, he kind of fingered me so hard I pooped myself a little bit. Like, I mean, I'm not even exact. Look, I'm not proud of it. I'm just saying. You know what I mean? Like, it's not my fault. He stuck his finger in the poo hole, and then he surprised he got poo. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't do that. You know what it comes from there, you know? But, like, he's a pirate, right? So what does he do? Doesn't freak out. Just literally grabs a towel, goes, I think you've shit yourself. And I'm like, what? Shit. You know? Before I can think, he's like, wiped it away, keeps right on fucking going, all right? Because he's a pirate, okay? Learn a lesson. All right. So, dear Lord. Okay. We're moving up. We're moving up the ranks, okay? And this, we're coming to the end. And this guy I've saved. He's in New York. He's special. You may know him. This guy, Ray, is FDNY, right? One of New York's bravest. And he totally had that, like, very Aryan, like, oppressive, like, 70s cop look with, like, the crew cut, like, blonde and, like, the thick mustache that's all, like, chips, you know? And I was like, oh, fucking hot, you know? And in this little game of Sesame Street that I play in my head, I'm trying to match up the hero that I know him to be with this kind of schmucky guy that I've been talking to for a while. As I'm gazing upon his naked chest and a huge 9/11 memorial tattoo in the middle of his chest. I mean, huge. Like, there were twin towers here. Like, you could see every fucking window in the towers. Do you know what I mean? There was, like, number of fallen firefighters. A firefighter, like, kneeling, weeping in the silhouette, like, never forget, emblazoned all up here. And, like, I lived in New York on 9/11. I'll never forget either. But, like, I'd like to forget for the next hour while I'm fucking this dude. Do you know what I mean? Like, nothing dries a girl up like 9/11, you know? Like, it doesn't matter that he's being all hot and he's, like, saying these amazing things to me. He's like, you are my perfect girl. I would do anything for you. I would love to suck another guy's cock for you. I don't need that done, but thanks. I mean, to be kind of fair to the guy, like, it didn't just come out of nowhere, but he did this thing that like guys will do with you, and ladies, you'll recognize it, where he was like, what's your fantasy? I want to know your fantasy. What's your fantasy? And they get all boy band. They're like, what's your fantasy? You know? And you're like, they don't want to know your fucking fantasy. They want you to share your little bullshit rinky-dink fantasy. So then they then have permission to share their huge, like, 3-ring circus passion play of a fantasy they've been working on since they were 13, you know? And there's a script. There's, like, you know, midgets and a fire and a clown. And fucking Miramax has got to option the rights to this guy's fantasy. It's so complicated, right? You know? So, like, I'm trying to come up with it, because he's waiting for me to say something like, rose petals leading to a bubble bath with champagne, and, like, really, you, like, normally your fantasy is him fucking you with a bigger dick than he's got, but, like, you can't say that, do you know, because then, like, he's rocking in the corner, and, like, sex is off, you know, so, like, you gotta come up with something. So I was like, I don't know, two guys, I don't know, because guys always say two girls, you know, an interview with a vampire was hot. I don't know why I said it. It was the first thing that came to mind. And he was like, oh, really? And I was like, oh, shit. You know it's bad when a guy takes keen interest in what you're saying. It's, like, going to get all fucked up from there. Like, if he's really listening, beware, you know? So, like, he was like, because I've always wanted to suck another guy's cock. And I'm like, okay, cool, awesome, you know? Like, I mean, it's like, now's not the time to be judgmental. We're having sex, you know what I mean? So I'm like, what? It's not like the guy's in the closet is gonna hop out like, hey, here's my dick, suck it. Like, it's just a fantasy, you know? So I was like, that's awesome, great. And he's like, really, you like that? And I was like, yeah, man, all the guys, all the cocks, suck them, suck them, suck them, suck them, hoover them all up, yeah. You know, and I was like trying to get him into it. And he got super pumped. And then the sex was amazing. I mean, seriously, it was like mind-alteringly good. And like, I'm getting close and he can tell. And then that's when he chooses to take the time to get really close into my ear and start whispering things like, and this is when the guy comes in and I start sucking his cock. And it's like, because he's from New York, he pronounces it cack. His cack, he's gonna suck his cack. And I'm like, oh my God, shut up, please. You know, it's like, if you're saying shit, you're not doing shit. Just go back to the doing shit. Oh my God. And the last one here is Dave, and he's not the Ace of Hearts because he was particularly amazing or whatever. He was just the person who got me closer to discovering my heart, because the thing is, with all these guys, with all these stories that I told and kept going through, I realized that I talked about them and like what their bodies were like and what they did, but I never was talking about me or what I did or the choices I was making, because I wasn't really making them. I was like, you like me? Great. And I had picked up on that from a very, very early age. And you know, there was so much of me not there. Do you know those moments that you have when you're having sex with somebody, you've just gone home with them and you're having sex and suddenly you're like, who the fuck are you? Who the fuck are you? And what are you doing inside of me? And even though he's the one wearing the condom, I'm the one who's feeling nothing, which is not the way that it's supposed to work. You know, we're all supposed to come here. We're all supposed to arrive and get somewhere. And I knew I couldn't do that if I wasn't being present. And I met this guy, Dave number nine. I mean, he was straight down the line, just like all the rest. He was a middle-aged white dude, because that's what I go in for, because I'm black and have daddy issues. Surprise, surprise. Okay, great. You know, and he's drunk, and he's got an accent, so I think he's charming, you know, and I can see his sad black Irish eyes coming at me like a fucking freight train that whole night, you know, and he takes me to the dance floor and dances with me fast and then slow and whispers romantic things mixed in with, sometimes I feel like I'm worthless and I want to die, and you're like, oh my God, that's horrible. I love you now, because that's the way women think, you know? And he had been in the military, so he was extra dark and emotionally unavailable. It's like triple word score, you know? And so, you know, I go back to his place, and he proceeds to, like, tell me horrible things that he did and how he's ashamed and wants to die, and then black out, right? So I'm just in bed, like, holding this guy at his house when his, like, violent PTSD spasms allowed me to hold his body. And it was so wonderful because he was so small and frail when he was asleep and in my arms. And I'm staring at his back and I'm tracing the line of this huge machete scar that he has in his back. And it's, like, long and rugged and deep and disgusting. And I love him in that moment more than I can ever express to anybody else, even though I don't know anything about him, because he's just done in, like, 5 seconds what I have not managed to do in all of my experience of sex, which was to just let somebody see my scars. You know, it's kind of all we want to do sometimes, just to have someone fully see us. And I looked at him and I thought, how beautiful that we could let and that someone would look at our scars. So that's it. That's my little journey about sex from 52 Man Pickup. And my name's Desiree Birch, and you can find me at DesireeBirch.com. Thank you guys so, so much.
Desiree Birch! That was fun. Okay, look up Desiree, keep in touch with everybody. Go to Stu Leonard's, pick up some bananas. So come back and see us, keep in touch. Have a good night.
Thanks for joining us for the first Funny Story podcast. We'll be back next month with another. And come see us live at the Brooklyn Brewery on Thursday, October 16th at 8:30 p.m. Check brooklynbase.com for details. I'm Annalise Griffin, editor-in-chief, and I hope to see you there with a beer in your hand.